Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Our special guest today is Rick Solis. Rick wears a lot of hats, actually. He is an investor. He's an appraiser, does a lot of appraisals for us as a hard money lender. He's also a landlord. And on occasion, he puts on his teacher's hat. So we're glad to have him on the radio show. Rick, thanks for taking time to join us.
Thanks, Bruce. It's an honor to be on your show.
All these things I mentioned, investor, appraiser, landlord, teacher, what's your least favorite one?
That would probably be appraiser.
Really?
Yeah.
That was a surprise answer. Okay.
No, I do that to pay the bills.
Okay.
But when the other things are thrown off enough cash flow, I usually give that up.
So that's happened before?
Yeah, I stopped doing appraisals from 2004 through 2008.
Okay.
The best 4 years of my adult life.
Okay. Well, in the next stretch, you probably, after things mature, you might be able to exit the appraisal definition and maybe the landlord definition, too.
You know, now that you mention that, I guess the landlord, actually, I didn't even think about that. That far and away would be my least favorite.
Okay. That's why you surprised me with that answer, actually.
Yeah, the appraisals are a challenge, too. They're not, I used to enjoy them a lot more before 2006.
Okay. What's changed? Let's talk about that, and has that continued up until, you know, up until now?
I think the main change is, the lenders are so skittish now. I mean, they're still kind of back in their 2008 and 9 mentality that the requirements on the appraiser are just a lot more time consuming. And it seems like no matter what they get, they're never satisfied. So I used to spend 4 hours on an appraisal report and give them 3 or 4 comps and, you know, get that thing finished from start to finish in 4 hours. And everybody was satisfied with that prior to 2006. Now I spend probably close to 7 or 8 hours, way more comparables, way more documentation, way more photos, and they're still just not excited about it after. I mean, they seem very skittish, and they just want more and more stuff.
Is there a review process that can trump your appraisal pretty easily?
You know, I actually was talking to an underwriter about that because I wanted to find out, and she said that on every transaction they do, they get a automated appraisal, like kind of like a, and they call them AVMs.
Right.
It is a computer-generated appraisal with, you know, comparable sales of the computer finds. A lot of times those are, it's kind of similar to Zillow, a little better quality, but they get that to kind of double-check the appraisals. And if there's too much of a disparity between that computer-generated appraisal and the appraisal report, then they order a review appraisal. In a review appraisal, a lot of times if the first appraisal going in is not extremely strong with, you know, 9 or 12 comps and lots of documentation, lots of photos, a lot of times your review appraisal will come in low and kind of squash the deal.
So the review appraiser is, if he comes in low, it's he must be right.
Yeah, the review appraiser is God as far as everybody in the transit. Well, actually, not just the review appraiser, the lowest appraiser in the transaction is right. So if they have multiple appraisals and a review appraiser, lowest guy wins.
And is that true of the AVM?
No. That, I think, is just, they just kind of double-check things with that. Although with the AVM, there's also comparables in there, and they will, the underwriters will kind of review those comparables and kind of question, you know, if they're, you know, a whole bunch of really close some comparables that are, you know, half mile away and close within the last couple of months, they will, that's a huge red flag.
Are they mostly concerned about the possibility of them buying back loans if they go into default?
Well, I did ask her about that too. And what she says, after the loan ends up at its final destination, and I'm not really sure how this transacts, but maybe it goes from the bank to the wholesaler that actually funds or closes the deal, and then it ends up with, say, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. At various times throughout that transaction, they will also all pull a computerized AVM appraisal. And at any point during that time, if there's issues, then it does come back on the original lender and the original appraiser. She said that's not as much of a concern for them right now because property values are going up, and they're aware of that. So the AVMs 2 or 3 months from now will be higher than the AVMs today. So not as much of an issue now, but in 2008, 9, 10, and even 11, it was an issue.
Right. I would imagine prices going up is going to start affecting a lender's relaxing standards, too. I mean, that seems to be what happens.
It did last time.
Yeah.
They got very lax last time.
It's happened every time that I'm aware of, except this time we almost have the only lenders available, you know, ultimately are the Fannie Freddie FHA.
Yeah.
So I was talking to a gentleman that I was trying to understand the ability for an FHA borrower to get qualified. And he has a company that's more strict than some other companies. So if he gets a client that has, let's say, a scenario that doesn't fit his particular lender, and it's all FHA loans, but they have a source they go to where that company does loans that they won't do, and it is driven by the fear that they might have to buy back the loan, not that FHA would say no to the loan. It's all about, okay, how many of these are we going to end up having to hold for the duration of the loan?
Absolutely. Well, and enough of those buybacks will put, especially a small company, out of business.
Yeah, their credit line is being used up solely on existing loans instead of collecting points and stuff.
Absolutely.
When you have price increases, and I guess we ought to talk about that, it seems like that solves most of our problems. So what are you seeing as far as price movement, and is it evenly... Of course, that's not as, I don't know, I know it's not even, but is it more uneven than normal when you're appraising properties in a market, let's say, before that's moving up? It seems like it floats most boats at the same time. So is that happening, or are there skews, and why is the skew different maybe this time?
I don't do a lot of the high-end stuff, so I'm not really, you know, on the houses over $700,000, I don't do a lot of that, so I couldn't really help you with that.
Well, let's.
But on the low end stuff, it's all moving up. It's all moving fairly rapidly, 2, even 3% a month. In some areas, I'm seeing huge, huge. Moreno Valley, I just did one, and the closed sales are at like 175, and they all closed in March. The stuff in escrow, all they were listing were like 10 or 15 grand higher than that, and they all went in escrow relatively quick, which makes me think they're going to close pretty close to the listing price. And the very few active listings that are available are even way higher than that. I mean, they're 200,000 plus.
And you're not talking 2,000 square feet anymore. You're talking about 1,300 to 1,500 square feet.
Yeah, I was right around there. But it's just amazing. So the active listings are literally more or close to 20% higher than the ones that were closed. And those are the lowest price active listings than the ones that closed in March.
You know, you help us out with the boot camp. So the last boot camp, I happened to pull Moreno Valley 150 and under. And I'll just kind of ballpark. There were, in the 30-day period, there was, let's say, 90 closings in that price range. There were 130 pending, and there were 12 available listings.
Yeah, so that's less than a week's inventory.
Yeah, I mean, way less than that. It's... Now, how many of those pendings are going to close, I don't know. But, yeah, when you have 12 available listings, obviously you're going to start moving to the next price range, 175 to 200, pretty easy.
Well, the 12 all seem like they're way higher than everything else, and they're just either waiting for the market to catch up to what they want, or they're waiting for somebody to just get so desperate that they're going to pay that. The other thing that was kind of weird about this one I did in Moreno Valley, and I've never seen this before, out of my six comparables, four of them were cash sales, all at, you know, high-end values. So it was worth 175, and they were paying 175, and they were paying cash.
Did you happen to notice were those investors that would be local or investors that would be wearing a hedge fund hat?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That.
Okay. I mean, they would think that there's some of each in there. But I still think the majority of these are being bought by private people as opposed to hedge funds. I guess we'll see.
Well, you know, I have the file right in front of me. I just did it. The first one is, individual in Torrance. The second comparable is an individual out of Arizona. That one might be a hedge fund. It's called Colfin, LLC out of Arizona. And the next one is just a private family out of Temple City. So it looks kind of like...
What's interesting, that's not even local.
No, they're all far away. El Segundo, Temple City, Torrance. That hedge fund was in Arizona.
When you say you're required to have 9 to 12 comps, I mean, is that commonly available at this point?
No, I'm not required to have. We're only really required to have 4 or 5.
Okay.
The 9 comps that I use or comparables that I use are so that my appraisal goes through the transaction with no issues and nobody's coming back to me. So there's no review appraiser that's going to put that level of effort into, smashing my appraisal or cut my value. So you can usually get by with 6, but if there's any question, and especially if it's a top-of-the-market sale and I'm having trouble, justifying the transaction, I will put in a couple additional pending sales and kind of document, these went in escrow within a week, that this was a listing price, how close they are. And I'll go the extra mile, which, costs an extra hour or two on each transaction to make sure that my appraisal doesn't have any issues down the road. Now, if I don't do that, then good chance they're going to come back at me and make me spend that extra hour or two anyway.
Okay. If you see a lot of price movement in Moreno Valley, let's say $200,000 and under, is that true for Moreno Valley at $400,000?
No.
Okay.
No, it seems like $200,000 the cutoff right now, but that probably won't be the cutoff by the end of summer.
Well, what's very interesting, and we run in this across of this in the boot camps, is that you got now, let's say, a 1,500 square foot house selling for $200,000, and then you have a 2,200 square foot house selling for $230,000. And all of a sudden, you end up with, okay, well, how much is that extra square footage worth? And it's really, it always comes down to what, 20 to 30 bucks a foot?
I've seen that many, many times in all the low-income, lower-priced areas frequently. So I think you're saying that the bigger house is 230. If you went even bigger, like another 500 or 600 square feet bigger than that, it'd probably only go up like 10 or 15 grand. I mean...
Well, I guess
the more you get over just the standard home that the market's willing to buy in that area, the less you get back.
Okay. I guess this is really what I wanted to know, because to me, I don't remember that holding true in years where you really had established bull runs, let's say in 2003, 4, and 5. It seemed that square footage was bonused a lot larger.
Perhaps in the 2, 3, 4, and 5. But in going back from, I started in 1989 or 1990, in most of those years, they were either prices were gradually dropping or flat. During those time frames, extra square footage isn't worth as much. During the boom times, I think people are willing to pay a lot more for that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I guess that's, I think the next price range that'll have that experience would be the bigger homes. And I think investors will move to some of that inventory.
It wouldn't be a bad plan. I mean, load up on that stuff now where you don't have to pay a whole lot extra and then get, a premium for it 2 or 3 years from now. The only drawback is, man, it costs a lot to re-floor that and repaint that every time a tenant moves out.
That is a downside of the bigger properties, that's for sure. It'll be interesting to see what builders end up building this time. The rumor was they were going to build a scaled-down house, but I kind of doubt it.
I think there's huge demand for stuff below 2,000 square feet from like 1,200 to 2,000. I think the land and the permit fees and all the stuff the government adds on is in California is so expensive that they really can't build a 1,400 square foot house and make that work. But I think there's huge demand for that if they could.
Yeah, but there's the profit, at the end of the day, that's what they're going to look at and say, okay, why would we build a 1,300 square foot house when we build a 3,000 square foot house here?
Yeah, and the lot with the permits and everything costs, the same $150,000 for them, whether it's a huge house or a little one.
Yeah, so you can see that that's probably going to not change if they can sell it. What it will do is delay the time frame for them to be able to start that, because what you're saying is very true. You can't pencil those homes yet as far as construction cost. If you're only getting 20 or 30 bucks a foot or less for the extra 1,500 square feet, it's hard to build that.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame, though, because there is a huge demand for, I think one of the biggest things I've ever seen demand for, especially if you target the over 55 segment of the market, husband and wife and no kids living at home,
mm-hmm.
they all want a nice big, you know, under 1,800 square foot, one-story house or condo. And when that type of inventory hits in like an area where a lot of those that type of buyer wants to live, they go at a huge premium, especially if it's a condo, an end unit, a one-story.
Mm-hmm.
That will sometimes sell for 50 grand more than a much larger two-story unit right next door. And especially I see it in like Glendora and Upland and Claremont and, you know, just those areas where the upper-income retirees with no kids want to live. They just don't build that anymore. That's a product with a huge demand.
In the Moreno Valley inventory that we've been talking about, where do you think that was a year ago?
I think it was probably 30% lower, maybe even a little bit more.
Okay. Now, what would be the equivalent price range in a Corona where you're having that explosive movement and then, you know, you top out to where the movement isn't so great in price?
You know, I think Corona's doing well also, but I don't think the prices are escalating as rapidly as Moreno Valley.
Really?
It didn't seem like that to me. I would think that the last one I did in Corona, it seemed like they were going up closer to 2% a month, and the Moreno Valley stuff looked like more like 3%. And this is on the lower end stuff in Corona. I'm not talking like the, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 square foot mansions.
No.
I'm talking on the stuff below 2,500 square feet.
We just had a recent, you know, in that square footage you just mentioned. So we buy it at a trustee sale. We think it's worth $400 6 months ago. We buy it for $325, but we have a difficult eviction that takes 6 months. And so we list it for $500 and goes pending with 2 all-cash offers in one day.
That's beautiful.
So 20. Well,
I would have sent that tenant a Christmas present.
Well, that's what I was kind of tongue in cheek today. I was talking to Greg, saying we ought to give him at least a thank you note.
Yeah, it means at least $50,000 just being a difficult tenant.
It's funny. That's what, you know, quadrant four bonuses is, anything that takes more time. Are you seeing now? You own a fair amount of properties. Let's say in the upper desert.
Yeah, I'm up in the high desert, mostly Hesperia, a little bit of Victorville.
Is any of the hedge fund activity affecting your ability to collect rent as far as higher rents?
We have not been able to raise rents since we started buying in 2009. And lately, the last probably 6 months or so, we've had to drop them a little bit. And we've noticed that there's a lot less tenant selection.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put something for rent. Instead of getting 50 interested people, maybe I'll get 10. And the quality of that tent is pretty low. I mean, they're a lot worse than they were a few years ago. And then when I drive through that area, when I'm either looking to buy something or, you know, just looking for vacant houses to write offers on, I'm noticing a lot more for rent signs than I did a year ago. So I would say since last summer, it's been a lot more challenging, and there's no rent increases coming in the immediate future up there.
And prices up there, have that been...
Right. Just like Moreno Valley, rapidly escalating.
Okay. And that's, do you think, what do you feel like the main cause is?
I think it's something similar for Moreno Valley. I think it's a lot of investors flooding in, trying to get whatever they can. I don't think there's a lot of owner-occupants up in Hesperia. I haven't checked. I mean, but it did seem like the same with the Moreno Valley. People, a lot of cash buyers paying retail. Some are even paying a little more than retail.
Do you think inventory levels will be radically different a year from now?
No, it seems like inventory fluctuations are slow. So they might be a little higher than now. I think once people that started buying in 2009 and 10, once they realize they have enough equity to sell what they had, and instead of living in what they just barely could qualify in 2009, selling that, walking out with a big chunk of cash and buying something they really want, I think those people are going to start selling. And that's when things really start picking up. That's when prices start just going through the roof.
Yeah, a lot of times I hear people say, well, when those people that are upside down, when they get equity, when they sell, there's going to be a block of inventory. Well, They also become buyers.
Now,
right. They become buyers in the next minute. So
it's just I'm surprised that the realtors aren't out in force. If I was a real estate agent, I'd be knocking on every door in Moreno Valley or Fontana, Rialto, of anybody that bought anything between 2008 and 2011, because they all have equity now.
Yeah, and that may not be the exact area they wanted to end up with, but they ended up starting somewhere, and now they could get certainly enough money to move up.
Oh, yeah. They all have, 40 or 50 grand to work with, and the rates are lower, so they can probably get the same payment for a much nicer home where in an area they want to be.
Yep.
I do very few appraisals, or did prior to last month, a very few, in fact, almost none, where it was a double transaction where somebody was selling to buy something else. And prior to 2006, I would say almost 100% of the sales I did back then were somebody selling something to buy something else.
So who the owner has been mostly a short sale?
Yeah, short sale, a lot of investor resales. So
okay.
First-time buyers buying the investor resales and then short sales.
Okay.
Not too many REOs anymore.
Right. And private, well, this is on the hard money loan side. What's the mix there? Is private seller catching up to short sales?
Yeah, it almost to me seems like a third, a third, and a third. A third REO, a third short sale, or maybe even a little less REOs and more short sale, and then a third private party.
And just in the last couple minutes that we've got, L.A. and Orange County, do you see similar price movement there?
I don't work those areas as much, but when I did, or with a few that I do, it seems like it's not as rapid as Moreno Valley, which is kind of usually the case on the higher end stuff. I mean, the low end Moreno Valley type stuff will just shoot up like crazy. I'd say the LA County stuff seems like more like 1.5 to 2% a month for the entry level housing.
Well, that's still 18 to 24%.
That's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I never thought I would live through another time period like this in my lifetime.
I don't think you've seen anything yet, would be my guess.
I'm really betting the farm that you're right.
Well,
but I made that bet on my own decision as well as yours. You're just backed me up. But I was really happy to hear your opinions.
Well, what's important is I really don't draw conclusions and then try to prove them. That's bad. So
no, I like that.
Yeah.
I more go with inventory levels. When I see inventory tight and everybody's scrambling to buy stuff, then I get very excited.
Well, and when's the last time you've seen these inventory levels? I mean, it's just
almost never.
Yeah,
maybe 2006.
Yeah, 5 or 6, and we had already spent all of our room as far as affordability.
Yeah, it seems like we have a long way to go before we get to anywhere near the house payment of 2006.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I think that's an important point to realize that could be where it's over. But we usually take a long time to get there. It'll be very interesting to see how long it takes this time.
This time it seems to me like they are going up as rapidly as they were going down, which is amazing. Because they were dropping 3% and 4% in 2008 and 2009, and they seem like they're going up at that pace now.
Well, and what happens then is you've got people that build equity at very quick paces to where they can become move-up buyers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's when things get really good for the realtors, the title companies, escrow. Everyone starts, and then that feeds on itself. I mean, those people go out and start buying stuff, and that's when things pick up.
For the research on the report I'm writing, I look through the history of magazine covers, and it always lags what's next. But in 2005, you got a picture of a guy hugging his house, on the front of one of the magazines, and you just go, "Yep, that's exactly how we felt about real estate."
I'm glad to see they're feeling like that again now.
Well, they just came out with the first, real estate is back, so we're not hugging it yet, but it won't be long.
Yeah, it won't take long at all, especially with social media now and the way everyone talks to each other. They know, they're starting to find out how difficult it is for their family and friends that are looking to find stuff, and we're starting to get out.
Rick, it's our time's over. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.